And I just want to introduce myself a little bit, just differentiate from my colleagues. We're all policy analysts, but they're economists and I'm not. So I'm not going to kind of play one on TV here. This is more about, you know, large general population kind of demographic work. I don't really take into account the premiums or the costs or the 8% limit. All those things are incredibly important, but that's not what I'm looking at here. So what we're going to be talking about in this presentation, using, I'd like to say, the California Health Interview Survey 2009, but I have no financial relationships to disclose, just to get that out of the way. And on this particular project, on SHIC, my co-authors are all sitting here in this room, except for Ken Jacobs. But on this particular project, my co-authors are Sophie Snyder, who's a graduate student who's been invaluable working on this, a graduate student of our Department of Health Policy and Management, Dr. Jerry Kaminsky, and Ninez Ponce, who is also principal investigator of the California Health Interview Survey and used to be one of our co-authors on the SHIC project. So we're funded on this project by the California Endowment, who has been so generous in funding all sorts of projects about the Affordable Care Act and implementation and outreach. But we also have the California Wellness Foundation as one of our funders, who has also been very generous with us over the years and really provides the core support for our SHIC project. But the reason why the Wellness Foundation is important is that they're very interested in health outcomes and access to care. And so that's really, you know, our focus and our partnership with them is based on that. So why California? Out of curiosity, so now I know at least one person in here is from California that I didn't know before. Who here is from California? Okay, so we have a California crowd. Great. I gave this presentation in Israel already earlier this year, and this slide was really necessary. You know, a lot of them were international. It's a very international crowd, and many of them were like, why should we even care about one state out of the United States? You have to tell us why we even care about the United States, right? But for this crowd, you kind of already know, but I'm just going to go over it real quick to remind you why we're so important. Yay, us. California is one-tenth the population of the United States. We are highly racially and ethnically diverse. We are, we like to call ourselves the bellwether of the nation. As California goes, the rest of the country will be going in about 5 to 10 years. So we are a minority-majority state at this point. So examining the Affordable Care Act impact in California gives insights to the national population as it's going to be happening. We have nearly 2 million undocumented immigrants, and we also have the largest population of the uninsured in the United States. Now, this 7 million figure is based on the California Health Interview Survey of 2007, actually. So that should have been updated, and I apologize. The more current figure with 2009 was 6.7 million, and with our CHIS 1112, we've dropped even a little bit more down to 6.5 million, I believe. So we're kind of slowly inching downwards, and that's entirely due, I'd like to say, to public program growth, just so you know. It's not that the job-based coverage system is all of a sudden roaring back to life and everyone is being covered by their jobs now. That's not it at all. And I'll put in a little plug for our website here. If you go to healthpolicy.ucla.edu, you will find our latest fact sheet with the CHIS 1112 data. You'll also find the CHIS 1112 data there for you to have fun with on our Ask CHIS system. And now that I'm thinking about it, I'm going to also mention Dr. Kaminsky didn't mention, we're in booth 1157 downstairs. If you want to come visit us in the exhibit floor, booth 1157, right on the corner. So, speaking of our booth and the CHIS survey, what CHIS is, for those of you who might not know, is it is a survey that interviews about 40,000 households every 2 years. So we're continuous. We used to be biennial, where we would do our 40,000 households kind of in one big 9-month shot, you know, every 2 years. But now we are in the field all the time. So starting from January 1st of 1 year and going through December 31st of the next year is our sample now. So when you go and you look, you'll see kind of an annual sample. This particular presentation is based on the last biennial CHIS, which was CHIS 2009. And 1112 is brand new data. It just came out a month or so ago, and of course we couldn't rerun all the analyses and the studies that we've done previously and updated them. I'd love to do that in the future. So two important things to know about CHIS and why we should care about what this particular data set tells us. It's administered in 7 different languages. So I was working the booth floor yesterday. For those of you who happen to stop by, great to see you again. But I was working the booth floor, and everybody that I mentioned that to, I would say, Chis is in 7 different languages. And I just love to see their reaction, because it was always like this, like, 7 languages, oh my gosh. Because most surveys are, if you're lucky, if you get Spanish. You know, it's English, and maybe you have Spanish. But we have, and I was telling this to a couple of researchers from China who were very happy to hear it, both Mandarin and Cantonese, Vietnamese, Korean. It's really important to be able to talk to people in their own language because, as Dr. Roby just said, so many of the populations of immigrants that we care about are limited English proficiency. And if you're going to ask them incredibly detailed questions about their health insurance, their health behaviors, where they live, what they do, you need to be able to talk to them in their own language. So these 7 languages are incredibly important for actually getting accurate answers. And we include very detailed race, ethnicity, and citizenship questions, which, again, you don't find on many surveys. The race, ethnicity questions in CHIS not only ask, were you born in the United States, and what race do you identify with, but also Latino heritage, what kind of Latino heritage, what country were you born in, if not the United States. We ask about Asian heritage, and on our Ask CHIS system, we even put those variables online where you can look up 9 different Latino types and 7 different Asian types. So we have incredibly detailed, categories that Dr. Roby presented that I'll also be presenting is actually an aggregation. Okay, it's not the entirety of even the race ethnicity data that we have. And then for citizenship, we go all the way to non-citizen without green card, which is, as we've seen in other papers and modeling have been led by Dr. Nadi Purad, is undocumented, almost 100%, you know, very close to undocumented. So when we say non-citizen without green card, that does mean undocumented, and we can use that population and look at them in terms of being left out of healthcare reform because of their citizenship status. Okay, so the Affordable Care Act. Who here feels like they know it inside and out? They're really good at this stuff. Okay, then I'm going to take a long time. We got time. We only had 3 presentations. Let's go into this real quick. The Affordable Care Act is incredibly complicated, but really the main gist of it is it's trying to give new health insurance options for people who didn't have it before, except for one group. If you're undocumented, you're not going to get new health insurance options. All those things that are discussed, you can't access. So the Medicaid expansion that we talked about, you can't access that. You're not allowed to be in Medicaid. California does fund its own version of Medicaid for undocumented with emergency Medi-Cal. I've had some people ask me about that. And then there's also federal rules that say legal immigrants under 5 years can't get into Medicaid, and California funds that with state funds. But really, if you're undocumented, you're not allowed to be on the Medicaid expansion. And then also the exchanges, this wonderful new thing, Covered California, that we have, you're not allowed to go into that either. And you aren't even allowed to go into it with your own money, which I think is a very important distinction. So if you happen to be undocumented and you're working, let's say, and the work does not give you health insurance, you're uninsured, and you have money that you want to spend and spend on premiums, you're not allowed to buy in Covered California. Which I'd like to point out is detrimental to all of us that want to get young and healthy people. I don't know if you've been watching Meet the Press and Face the Nation lately, but they've been like really frothing at the mouth about this whole, we need to get young and healthy people in the exchanges or they're going to fail. Everyone's been kind of really upset about that right now. Young and healthy population is the undocumented population, actually. They're younger and healthier than the rest of us. Why aren't we letting them in just to buy with their own money, even without giving them subsidies? It doesn't make economic sense, but it was a political question. So they cannot go into that expansion. So because of this, something else to look at is what happens to the children of these families. When you have undocumented parents, their children might be undocumented themselves. They may have brought them in with them. Or they might be citizen children who are actually eligible for these expansions. And so what happens to those children in these kind of mixed citizenship status families where the non-citizen parents might find it difficult to enroll or barriers to enrollment or might be afraid to enroll, being worried about? Do anyone know what the Immigration Service is called now? It's not the INS anymore. What's it called? ICE, isn't that a great act? I don't even know what it stands for, but ICE, it's very chilling. And we call it the chill factor, that whether or not they're going to have this chilling effect that ICE will come and get them. I would like to point out they actually called it the chilling effect way before ice was created, but it just fits together so well. So our research questions for this particular study is, what is the actual extent of the potential population left out of healthcare expansions? Because people, we didn't know that before. So let's look at the survey and find that out. How big are these populations? And would citizenship status be a predictor of insurance status for kids if you control for all these other factors, including citizenship, parental status, work status, and race ethnicity? So we know that these things, we called it the chilling effect just a moment ago, but direct and indirect exclusions is really what they are. This table is actually using 2007 data. This comes from a paper that Dr. Ponce and I published back in 2011, but it just illustrates that we have these populations here. This 170,000 children who are non-citizen without green card, they're directly excluded. And then you have this other 210,000 who are indirectly excluded. But when you look then at the eligibility for health care reform, and this is from the 2009 data with the 7 million uninsured, this is not just taking income into effect, I'd like to point out, but also the citizenship status. So we're kind of looking at who is eligible. We're not looking here at propensity to enroll. So this is separate from the CalSIM data that you just heard, which took a lot of other things into account, all those other data sets. This is just, if you take the California uninsured population and make these cuts, whether or not people would be eligible under the program. So we have 3 million under Medi-Cal eligibility if you have it at 133% of the federal poverty level. If you take that 5% income disregard into account, it bumps up to 3.3 million, just so you know. The exchange eligible subsidies is another 1.7 million. Exchange eligible without subsidies, but really that population we care about is this 1.12 million at the top there, the 16% who are ineligible for the Affordable Care Act expansions because of their citizenship status. That group right there. So when we look at the 2009 data, let me bring up my little circles here, we can see, and this is looking at family citizenship status, because again, you care about whether or not the kids are citizens, but you also care about their parents' citizenship status. You really can't look at one without the other when you're talking about kids' health insurance. That if you look at enrollment in Medi-Cal or healthy families, kids who are non-citizens, 44% of them are enrolled in Medi-Cal or healthy families, and 22% of kids who are both parents and child are citizens are in those programs. And then you look also at the child citizen and the parent is non-citizen, it's 79% of those are enrolled. So then looking at the uninsured numbers, 28% of kids who are non-citizens are uninsured all or part year, 8% of kids who are both citizens and their parents and citizens, and then a comp, oh, I'm sorry, I thought I had another circle there. Let me go back. I should have another circle around that 10.3. The 10.3 for the child citizen and the parents are non-citizen is comparable to when the both are citizens. So the non-citizen without green card parents are enrolling their kids to a high enough rate in public programs that they bring their uninsured rate all the way down to where it almost matches citizen kids with citizen parents. So then here is my odds ratio results from the multivariate model answering that second question of, if you take all of these other factors into account, what are the important predictors of being uninsured among kids? So bringing up the circles here. So when the child is a citizen and the parent is a non-citizen without green card, they actually have half the odds of being uninsured as, let me get rid of that. Whoops. There. Half, I really should say almost two-thirds, almost 60% the odds of being uninsured as compared to the reference group, which is both the parents and the kids are citizens. They have lower odds of being uninsured when you take other things into account. And then when you compare the non-citizen kids themselves, it's 2 to 3 times the rate of being uninsured compared to kids who are citizens, taking other things into account. So work status, you can see, is very important in the way that you would expect, that if parents work full-time, their kids are much more likely to be insured. When they don't work full-time, they're much more likely to be uninsured, which is what you're seeing here. And then also race ethnicity, you can see that even taking all these other things into account, there's still a 1.5 times odds of being uninsured for being Latino an independent effect is still seen by race ethnicity, even when you take all of these other things into account. And then we look at poverty level, and again, you see what you would expect to see, which is people who are higher income, if you're anything other than high income, and 300% of the federal poverty level is not very high, let's just say that. But if you're anything but that group, you are much more likely to be uninsured. And you see this kind of bubble there in the middle of 100 to 199, because in the world of 2009, that's where you get kids kind of eligibility kind of dropping off between Medi-Cal and healthy families, and that transition is supposed to be seamless as kids get older, but as we all know, it is not. So there is kind of that little bubble there. So I want to pause here for a second. I think we do have just a minute, and just go back and point out that 0.57 odds of being uninsured in the beginning. Let's not forget that as we go forward. So looking at conclusions, immigrant children are much more likely to be uninsured compared to citizen children. Restrictions in the Affordable Care Act will leave kids out, but non-citizen parents do a good job of enrolling their citizen children. So that kind of fear of the chilling effect actually is not borne out in this model. And those have been some pretty surprising findings to people, and God willing, you will see it published in a journal next year. But this is certainly something that I think is very important to realize when we're talking about enrollment and outreach, that people want to sign up their kids for programs for which they're eligible. And the residual population of uninsured children in California will be predominantly Latino and undocumented by regulatory design, I'd like to point out. And the safety net must be preserved to ensure quality health care. And then here is my email and our websites for both our center and for the survey. Thank you.
Thank you. So we have time for questions.
Yeah, it's best to do it after each presentation, yeah. Just while it's fresh. Any questions?
Undocumented parents.
Right, the parents were non-citizen without green card, and the kids were citizens, either naturalized or native-born.
Part of the reason perhaps has to do with the fact that there might be different outreach, or at the point of service, there's something going on there that these people are more likely to have.
Well, they are overcoming barriers of poverty. So we're taking out the poverty, right? I mean, we took that out as an independent effect. We took out the work status, so whether or not they have job-based coverage, you know, that is an independent effect. And then Latino comes out too, which, you know, I find it surprising that Latino still does have an independent effect, even with all these other things. And when you take all of those things and hold those constant, it seems as if that group is really doing a very good job of enrolling their kids. It's at 77% enrollment in public programs is bringing their uninsured rate to be much lower than you would expect it to be, given their poverty level and their work status. And I think that the biggest reason is these community connections, that there are such strong networks within the free clinics, but also, you know, within the county-based system and within non-governmental organizations that are outreaching to those groups. And it seems that they're doing it pretty successfully, you know, from my model here. And I would be very interested, as we all know, there was a surge in public programs up through 11-12, and I would really love to update this analysis and see if these are holding. You know, this is all pre-ACA, and it would be great to see what this is like moving forward. But I think what it shows is that if you don't keep people out, especially, you know, their children, by regulation, people want to enroll their kids. They will do so. They will get over their fear, and if they know that they're not going to be deported because of that information, if that's made clear to them, then they will definitely enroll their kids. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. No, and I certainly, it is, if you look on my whiteboard in my office, it says write this article up by the end of December and get it submitted. That is my goal. Before we leave for winter break, this is going to be submitted somewhere.
Yeah. And kids are in California are eligible up to 250% under.
Right, for either Medi-Cal or healthy families.
Right, as healthy families.
Right, which, and these combine those two
correct
programs together, these findings. Yes?
Thank you for your presentation. I can be found in San Diego, and I was wondering if
Yay, SD. Me too. I grew up there.
So, is it robust enough for you to deal with metal?
I don't know, and I would highly doubt it, honestly, because even with the depth in the California Health Interview Survey, uninsured children as a group by itself is incredibly low. I was kind of lucky to be able to do it at the statewide level and keep it stable. I really don't know if I could even move it to Los Angeles, which is our biggest sample. But that's a good question, because Los Angeles, San Diego, Imperial, and Riverside are our biggest samples. Maybe even Los Angeles and other Southern California might be possible, and it would be good to know. Right, absolutely. Good question. I did not include any kind of region or county in here, and that might be something to just include in the model as the separate. That's not a bad idea. Include that in the model to update it and see if there's a separate regional effect. Yeah, that's a great idea. Okay, any other questions? You look like you want to say something. From me, there's going to be one more from Dr. Roby. Yeah.
We have time.
Okay, I'll wait.
We have time.
Yes.
I'll wait until the last presentation.
Okay. Well, they're very different. His is another one on CalSIM. So if you have one that's specifically on this, we can talk about it now. It's fine.
It's not specifically
now. Okay.
Okay. Yes. And that's a good question, and that's something I don't have in the model right now, and I'm trying desperately to remember whether or not CHIS has a question on that. Because CHIS is a household-based survey, and it's stratified by county, we are very much tied to where people live. And it does make a difference. We aren't a panel survey, so you know we don't follow people as they cross county lines or anything like that. It would be interesting to know whether or not they had moved within the past 5 years. And I know we've had housing modules on surveys, but it's been one of those questions that's come and gone as it gets funded. It's not on every single survey, and I can't remember if it was on CHIS 2009. But I think that's a great point, and it's definitely, you know, as I add region into the model, something else that you're right would, I think, be an interesting factor to look at and see whether or not that also pulls out some of the effect. Yes. Right. The Latino part?
Yeah.
Okay, all great suggestions. Great.
Thank you. Thank you, Shana. And thanks for your questions.